Ah, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Tori Meister kind of bubbled into my awareness in the mid to late 2000s at a time when there was a lot of up-and-coming, hot, kind of teenaged surfers doing massive airs on small waves. But what stood out for Tori was just his versatility. I think he did a couple of video submission contests like Intersection, and there was clips of him just charging huge waves at Backdoor. And then the airs that he was doing were these really contorted, whipping, improvised airs that just looked unique and interesting. And in the economic downturn in 2008, Tori lost his main sponsor. But what impressed me most was that he began documenting his travels and his career path through a blog called Alter Ego. And so he'd post video clips of him on the road around the world, sponsorless, meaning he was doing it on his own dime. And that's where I really developed a lot of respect for Tori, because in those years, without the sponsor, was when he was doing his greatest surfing and improving his craft. And so I admired that. I was really gratified to see that when O'Neill did their Coldwater Classic event in 2013, where they offered first prize winner a sponsorship contract, that Tori was able to win that event and get the backing that he deserves for the talent that he possesses. So it's been a real rising from the ashes story for Tori, but he's had a wild ride, and that's why I wanted to get his unique and inside perspective on all the things that we really discuss just speculatively in this show normally. Tori's lived it, and that's why I wanted to have him on today's show. So, in our conversation, Tori tells us what it's like spending a year on the road attempting to qualify for the world tour. He gives us dollar amounts for what it costs. He tells us what it's like to be trapped in a cave at Pipeline. And really, he just shares his greatest lessons from life on the road. Tori finished 32nd last year on the qualifying series. He had a spot in the trials event for the Pipe Masters. In late November, in a warm-up session before the event, he paddled into a wave, suffered a serious wipeout, and has not been in the water since. That's where we begin our conversation. This is David Scales for Surf Splendor, and here's my conversation with Tori Meister.
Yeah, I thought I was pretty late. I was in the trials for the Pipeline Masters, so I was just kind of getting warmed up. Pipe hadn't been very good, leading up to that. It was kind of a lot of sand, and we didn't have too many swells to wash it all out, so it was really dangerous and not really good. So I was kind of avoiding it and surfing Sunset a lot, because if I would have made a couple heats at Sunset, I could have qualified. So all my focus was there, so that was kind of... after Sunset ended, I only had a few days to get Pipe, surf Pipe again. And, when you grind out the whole QS the whole year, you kind of, get to surf Pipe every day. So anyway, it was like kind of one of my first sessions. And I thought they were going to run that day. It was, 4 foot and pretty fun backdoor. And the next swell looked pretty north and wild. And I thought they were going to run. So I went out there early in the morning, and I was just trying out a few boards. And... around 8 o'clock or so, they called it off, and I was like, all right, perfect, another day to practice and get ready for this event. And pretty much after they called it off, that wave came in, and I paddled forward, and I remember looking at, I think Dusty was paddling up the face of it, and I was like, shoot, I feel like I'm a little too late. And then I heard someone say go, and I was like, no, I got this. And then I don't think it was Dusty, but I think he kind of like looked at me like, oh, this is a good one. And I thought it was a good one too, and it was it was pretty doubled up, and there's a lot of bad waves too. There's a lot of backwash and stuff kind of going through it, and that one looked like it was going to be a good one because of the double up on it, and the wind was kind of coming on shore, so it just looked like it was going to hit the reef right, kind of backdoor. You want to look for those ones that, you know, hit the reef right, and so I was like, all right, I'm going, and I went, and I remember I was like, oh man, I'm pretty late, but I think I got it, and the line I had, you know, I felt like I was going to make the drop. I wasn't really second guessing myself. I felt like, oh, I'm just going to get, you know, make the drop and make it under this thing, and hopefully I can get a pump, you know, to get through it, because I felt like I was a little deep, and I didn't even get that far.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was on the wave, if I hit a chop or something. I know when I look at the footage, there could have been like a little backwash on it that might have just made my fins slide, but what happened was pretty much I just lost all my fins, and so then I had no fins, and all of a sudden I'm like doing a 180 down this thing, and you know, thinking that, you know, my body's going one way, my board's going the other.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm like, yeah, I'm probably gonna fall right now. But it happened so fast that I didn't even have time to fall properly, you know, like if I would have known, I would have, you know, jumped and landed on my, you know, fell with my feet down rather than my stomach.
Sure.
And I guess I just thought I was gonna make the wave, and it was just kind of this random happening of my fin sliding out and, you know, and landing weird that caused me to rupture my spleen. Yeah.
When you hit the water, did you know it was bad at that point?
You know, I didn't think it was that bad. I hit the water and I was like, oh, that was sore. And I was like, I came up, and actually Anthony Walsh was right there with a little GoPro, and he's like, oh, how'd that feel, mate? And I was like, oh, that was a good kidney shot, but I didn't lose any air.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'm all right. And then I paddled back out. I was going to catch another wave, and I was actually out there talking to one of my friends, and you know, a couple minutes went by, about 10, 15 minutes went by, and I was like, man, this thing feels like it's getting worse. Like, I fractured my ribs before, and it was very similar to that feeling, you know, like when you fracture your rib, it's hard to breathe, and that was kind of where I was at. Like, I was like, man, I'm having a hard time breathing, so I actually paddled in, which, you know, as a surfer, you never do.
No. Even after dark, I'm going to catch one more.
No, you're getting one more. It doesn't matter if it's a great white shark circling.
Yeah.
You get one more. So, yeah, so I paddled in, and I got to the beach, and I was kind of feeling it, and, you know, I kind of felt, it was so hard to breathe that I felt like I might have collapsed a lung or something like that, but I've never done that before, but I don't know, I was just running through all the scenarios in my head, like, what happened, you know, this is worse than a bruised rib, you know, this just feels kind of worse than a fracture, and so then I went up to the O'Neill house, and, you know, I took a hot shower, started feeling a little bit better, and I went inside and got a glass of water, and that was probably one of the most painful things, was just, I don't know what it was, if the water was cold. I guess your spleen is kind of reactive to cold water and cold things. And, it hurt really bad. And I was like, whoa, that's kind of strange. I've never felt that before. And then so then I grabbed all my stuff and I went home. And as I was going home, my dad was leaving. And I'm like, hey, I think I hurt my ribs. Like, I might have fractured. I probably got to go to the hospital later or get some x-rays on it, because you know, I was hoping it was bruised. I was just gonna, you know, stick it out and surf my heat the next day.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And I went to lay down, and that was kind of when I was like, okay, this is bad, because I almost passed out. And,
yeah
my head got super light, and I almost just passed out on my bed, and I was like, all right, we need to go to the hospital. And from that point, that's when it got really bad. Like, it's the pain got really sore, and I remember the ride to Kahuku Hospital from my house. I just, every single bump, I could just feel it, like someone was jabbing me, and you know.
A rupture is basically a tear, so the impact from the massive belly flop tore his organ. The spleen plays multiple supporting roles in the body. It acts as a filter for blood as part of the immune system. The spleen also helps fight certain kinds of bacteria. Because of its location, the spleen is vulnerable to injury, and a rupture often leads to life-threatening internal bleeding. There are a few treatment options for Tori.
The first thing, the number one option, they gave me three options. Number one option was obviously, you know, it stopped bleeding and you don't have to get surgery.
Okay.
Number two was they go through an artery in your leg and they go all the way up in there and they, what is it, like singe it? It's not the right word.
Cauterize it.
Thank you.
I never
get that right. But yeah. And then that hopefully stops the bleeding. And then the worst, know, the worst thing that could happen is they remove the whole thing.
And so, you can live without it, though?
You can live without it. I heard you got to be on medications and stuff like that, you know, for your immunity and whatever else it does. So right now, I mean, I'm still not out of the woods, but, you know, it's, they said that it should be good by now, you know?
Yeah.
But if it is bleeding, which it doesn't feel like it is, I would have to get it removed at this point. But right now it feels good. So I got a CAT scan in a couple days, and it's going to kind of determine whether it's completely healed or not, or how much longer I have.
Right.
But as far as like being through it, you know, most likely it bleeding again, I'm through that stage at this point.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going on 2 months.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So I feel like when we watch Hawaii from California on the webcast and stuff and see all the footage come out, we see the best surfers in the world surfing big but perfect waves, and it kind of lulls you into a false sense of security. You know, we forget that it's as dangerous as it is.
Yeah.
And then when wipeouts happen, like, did you see Leo Fioravanti's wipeout the other day?
Yeah, I heard about it, yeah.
Right? And he broke his back. He broke two vertebrae. And it's like, I've seen wipeouts that are gnarlier than that regularly. That and guys just pop up out the back and, like, paddle out. What is the difference, you know, between the ones that really put you out and the ones that don't?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like that's a, you know, that's a great question. I feel like I've had way worse wipeouts at Pipe than the one I had there. Like, 1,000 times worse. So I was like, oh, this is bad. I'm definitely going to, you know, get really worked here or break something. And for some reason, you just pop out of it. I think it's just maybe being unlucky and just the way you fall. Sometimes, you know, the wave is so powerful and strong, you know, sometimes you just fall in the perfectly wrong spot, or you fall in the perfectly okay spot, and all of a sudden you're fine. And, yeah, I don't know. I guess that's the only definition I can really think that would... You know.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly understand all the variables surfing out here at the pier. Like, oh, you can get wrecked on a 2-foot shore break when you don't expect to.
Yeah.
But at Pipeline, I wonder, you know, like for guys like Jamie O'Brien who live there and have surfed it all the time, how well they actually know where those holes in the reef are or where the dangerous spots in the reef are, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure he does for sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
so there is an element of predictability, would you say?
For the most part, yeah. Like there's, you know, there's places on the reef that if you go out with a mask and stuff, you can kind of figure out where where they are, the holes and stuff like that. Obviously, you know, the inside at back door is really dangerous. There's, you know, it's really shallow and there's a lot of holes and stuff in there. And but at the same time, I mean, everything happens so fast, you know, you could fall in a hole, and I'm sure anyone could, but...
nothing you could do to avoid it.
Yeah, nothing you could really do. Jamie, I think he's broke his leg out there a couple
times. I think he broke
both. Twice, yeah. So the thing about Pipeline is, surfing Pipeline, you just got to know that it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
And just kind of accept the fact and kind of roll with the punches, you know. Jamie's actually funny. I remember when I first was younger, I was like 17, and I went over to his house, and I, like... broke my board before my heat or something, and I was all bummed, and he's like, oh, you broke your board? And I was like yeah, so bummed, like. And he's like, I broke both my legs out here, you gotta pay your dues, girl.
And the board ain't nothing.
Yeah, that's true. But I was like, what am I gonna ride tomorrow? It's supposed to be huge. It was like one of the first times I did that. I think it was a Monster Energy drink contest at that time or something. Yeah, the Monster Pro. So,
but
anyway,
then you see guys like
in perspective.
It, for sure. But you see guys like Kelly who have surfed it as much as anybody, who never seems to get injured ever, you know?
Yeah.
So it's weird.
I'm sure he has, though.
You think so?
Yeah. I remember a couple years ago, he like fractured his rib on a wave. Yeah.
Out there,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was actually, I tried to go on that wave too, and he was a little bit deeper than me, but.
Well, good thing you didn't go then.
Yeah, but he fractured his rib on it. But I mean, yeah, he's probably had a lot more things happen to him we don't even know of.
Sure.
In social media these days, every time someone gets injured, it seems like everyone knows.
That's true. Yeah. What's the worst situation you've ever been in out there?
One time, it was actually last year's Volcom Pro, I got stuck in a cave during my heat, and that was probably one of the scarier things that happened to me.
How does that go down?
It was I think it was like first heat of the morning, and I went on this wave at back door, and I was pretty late, and I made the drop, and as I made the drop and I tried to pull up, and as I did, it was like the wave had no bottom. It just sucked me straight down, and it was almost like I didn't really even hit that much water. It was kind of just like straight into a hole. And then I remember just getting pushed up against this thing And I was kind of feeling around, and I was like, oh man, I'm in a cave right now. This is sketchy. But it wasn't like I was like under the rock, really. I was kind of like just getting pushed into it really hard. And so then I started feeling around. I felt my way out. And meanwhile, you know, like the waves are still, it was almost a two-wave pull down. And I'm pushed up, and finally it let go. And as I was coming up, I mean, I must have been inches from getting a breath, and my leash got wrapped around the rock. So then I was like, oh my goodness. So then I had to go back down. So then I went back down and started jiggling my leash, and like I was like, all right, I gotta rip this thing off. And right as I went to rip it off, it uncaught, and then I came up, and I came up like in the wave of the next wave, and that freaked me out a little bit, and I was pretty scared, but I ended up having the best heat.
Oh, after really? That. Did you make it through the
yeah,
heat?
Yeah, I made it through, but I got some of the best waves I did at
That's
that
crazy.
Contest. But
so you could regain composure after that and get a few more?
Yeah, well, the waves are pumping, so.
That's so funny. Because on the webcast, too, like, the announcers don't know that happened, obviously. They might have thought, like, oh, that was a gnarly wipeout, but you're struggling for your life. You know?
Yeah, you don't even know, yeah. Yeah, that's it's crazy. Pretty funny. I know, it's crazy with all the technology and stuff. Sometimes, like, people, you know, they can't tell what you're going through out there. Like, I broke a board at Haleiwa this year, and no one even knew I broke a board. And
oh,
I
really?
Came onto the beach, grabbed a new board, and paddled all the way back out. I think one of the commenters was like, man, Tori's really blowing. Like, he's not catching any waves. And I was like, we've been on the beach for like 10 minutes, man. Give me a break.
Well, we talk about that on the show sometimes about, like, how they can improve the webcast basically for the viewers, right? And it's like that story of being stuck in the cave, they can't necessarily tell in real time, but it's super interesting, and I would love to have heard that during the broadcast in some way.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I don't have any advice for them on how to capture that story.
Yeah,
but
it's kind of a weird one.
But it would be, I mean, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, that would be the most interesting story of the event.
Yeah, it makes it it definitely, like, you know, tells you how dangerous surfing is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
which
stuff
is
like,
cool for the
totally,
sport.
Totally. And stuff like that probably happens with regularity, you know?
For sure. And people don't even know unless the guy wins the heat and is like, oh, yeah, I got stuck in a cave. I almost died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious about growing up in Hawaii, like on the Big Island of Hawaii specifically, and like, it doesn't get as much attention, obviously, as Oahu, but even like Maui nowadays has tons of talent coming out of there, and it seems like maybe they've got the right film crews with them now, or guys who are interested in filmmaking that have been able to kind of document that movement. And Kauai, obviously, with the Irons brothers and everybody else. What was it like growing up on the Big Island, and how is it different?
Growing up on the Big Island was awesome for me.
Was it?
Yeah, I loved being there, and you know, we had Shane Dorian and Conan Hayes. Those were kind of our mentors at the time, and well, still Shane is for sure. And you know, the waves don't get as big usually. It's pretty rare for the waves to get as big as the North Shore and stuff like that there. So it is kind of sheltered from all the other islands. You know, we get blocked. So the degrees are really what's important. That's really what makes the Big Island break and be good. But one of the coolest things about growing up on the Big Island was just like, it's, you know, real raw, it's all reef and stuff like that, so it gets you really comfortable with, you know, really shallow reef. I think the Big Island has probably the most alive reef I've ever seen. You know, you get, you touch it and it's just like, you got, it's like razor blades, it just cuts you open. So, you know, we kind of have that, you know, part where you get comfortable with surfing a reef break, you know, the break I grew up, Banyans, you know, it's just this sick little left and right, and it kind of reminds me of like a little bit of a Lowers, you know. It's really riffable, and it breaks, you know, 365 days out of the year, and there's always waves, and it gets, you know, breaks in the summer and it breaks in the winter too. So that was pretty much the coolest, you know, training ground for me. You know, that's also Shane's local spot,
and right,
so having him come down there and surf was always inspiring. And then he always had his surf contest,
right,
you know, the Keiki Surf Classic, and all those, you know, Kelly would come and Rob Machado would come and all these guys, and yeah, so he always brought the talent to kind of show us kids what we need to do.
Sure. What's access like? I mean, the North Shore is like the 7 mile, there's waves kind of right next to one another.
Yeah.
Is it centralized like that?
Kona, it kind of is, but not like the North Shore for sure.
You need a car to get
around.
You need
a car, but you need a car that's lifted with a four-wheel drive, because there's a lot of places that are really good, and they get really good, but no one really knows it. You know, there's not a surf line cam or anything like that. You know what I mean? It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, the Big Island is so much different than, you know, it's always changing. You know, you'll go to a place and it's like you're on the moon. Don't quote me on this, but I've always been told that there's 13 climactic zones in the world and we have 11 of them on the Big Island. And then I heard it's 8. So I don't know. It's one of the, it's around those numbers. So that's pretty amazing.
But you know, it snows there, right?
It snows, yeah. And we got, you know, like rainforest.
Yeah.
And then we got the lava rocks. And then we just, we got all kinds of stuff. And you have these, you know, little nooks and crannies where that get good, but you have to know. And that's the thing that kind of separates the Big Island, I think, from Oahu is you got to know where to go. And
sure.
And it's a big island, too. You know, we can fit all the islands in our one island.
Right.
So there's a lot of driving and you got to be motivated. But, you know, growing up at Banyans was good because it broke so much. There was waves all the time. And then the talent that I had growing up with too was insane. You know, Tonino Benson and Casey Brown, those kids were same age as me. And so those were like my main competition. And that was kind of our healthy little pushing each other kind of deal. So it was good.
What was it like in terms of like industry support? You know, like I'm sure sponsors are willing to give out contracts on the North Shore, probably more likely.
Yeah, for sure. North Shore was kind of like the next step. Like, you know, the Big Island was really nice, you know, like you get your airs and all that kind of stuff down. But really the next step, I think, for us was going to Oahu and proving ourselves there. And, you know, my dad, he moved to Oahu, so that kind of made it easier for me to go over there and spend a lot of time on the North Shore. You know, I always went there when I was a kid, but I kind of moved there when I was, you know, 15 or 16 and spent a lot of winter days there because you have to be there, you know.
Yeah.
Even, I mean, Albie and Matt, they're kind of, you know, they're making a whole new niche.
Sure.
But during that time, you know, going surfing pipe and sunset and getting good in those kind of waves, that was really important. I still believe it really is. I mean, it's part of the Triple Crown. It's it's the most prestigious three events of the year, so...
Any interest? I mean, obviously, Pipeline's a big wave, but do you have any interest in, like, big wave surfing kind of beyond that?
Yeah.
Have you had much experience?
You know, just on the North Shore and stuff like that. I'm not as experienced as, you know, some of those guys, but I really definitely have a passion for big wave surfing. I love, you know, going out there and being scared out of your mind and, you know, and conquering your fears, I guess. And I definitely want to try to get better at a place like Jaws or something like that and
Have you spent any time out there?
I went twice. One time I was towing in. It was a long time ago. It was like 2009, I think.
Okay.
I went for this time they ran the eddy. It was the last time they ran the eddy. I went for that swell. And that was kind of I've never even towed into anything before, so I was just kind of like shoulder hopping and stuff.
Yeah.
There was like 50 jet skis and like, you know, 8 boats or whatever it was, 4 boats, and there was like helicopters everywhere. It was pretty overwhelming, but it was cool. And then I went last year and I stayed with Albie, and when it wasn't that big, it wasn't as big as any of these last swells or anything, but you know, I got one and broke my board, and that was kind of cool. And so I was like, man, I want to get a good one. Like, I don't want it to end like this. I want to make one. So
yeah. What's it like being out there?
That's
another wave that it looks so perfect and blue and idyllic that I know it is nothing like that when you're out there, probably, you know?
Yeah, for sure. One thing I was really surprised was just the way it comes in. Like, I've surfed like Waimea and stuff before, and when Jaws comes in, it almost, like, my first 30 minutes, I was tripping out because it looked like it was going to close out.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, these guys are, like, going on these waves, and these are, like, 20-foot closeouts. Like, these guys are crazy. Like,
yeah.
I couldn't believe how these, like, just head down and going. And I was like, that wave's going to close out for sure. And then I'll look back, and they'll, you know, see, like, a spit or something, and then he'll make it. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Maybe that was just a lucky one. But it happened over and over again, and that was kind of, like, pushing myself, like, all right, this is a good wave, even though it looks like it's gonna close out. Like, I wouldn't go on this wave if it was at Waimea because it looks like a, you know,
sure,
yeah, because it looks like it's just gonna close out. But it took me a while to get over that. Like,
yeah,
it took me like an hour to like or so or 30 minutes to actually catch a wave because I kept thinking they were gonna close out just the way it looks. But it was kind of like a big VLAN, if I guess the best way to describe it.
I could see
VLAN kind of comes like this, and you know, it pushes off the reef, and it, and then those ones that kind of come wide are the good ones, and they right. kind of barrel and stuff, and then you got that, you know, that peak farther outside, you know, it's kind of like the more northern peak or whatever, and
yeah.
kind of rolls in, and then there's a left too, and
right.
but I wasn't really paying attention to the left,
right?
But yeah, it was definitely a humbling experience. That wave's crazy, you know. Even
yeah.
the wave that I went down on, it was like just I got so annihilated, and it was a cool experience. But I was really bummed I broke my board. I was like, oh, really? Like mm-hmm. it was the only big board I had too, so I didn't go back out,
right?
Really,
so
that was unfortunate.
But. Talking kind of about the business of surfing, I remember you were with Billabong back in the day. Was that facilitated by Shane at all on the Big Island, or how did that come together?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I'm sure Shane helped me in that aspect of getting on Billabong.
Sure.
Actually, I think the main person that got me on Billabong was Dino Andino.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we went on a trip to El Salvador. It was long. I was on Fox at the time. And yeah, we just went down there for his, I think it was a Dino and Snips camp, I don't know if you remember that, but anyway, so the waves were pumping, we had an epic trip, and I don't know, I guess he liked the way I surfed, and he was kind of like, yeah, you should pick this guy up. And
that's awesome.
And then so yeah, that next year they did, and I was with them for 4 years.
Yeah I was surprised when you got let go. I remember, like, I'd watched like, you were doing some stuff with Aaron Lieber, I think. Did he do your intersection?
He did my intersection, yes.
Yeah. So I saw that stuff, and it was like, I was blown away by how well you surfed, you know? And so when you were let go, though, I mean, it was just one of many who got let go, and that had nothing to do with your surfing, of course.
Thanks.
More to do with the economic downturn. But throughout, I mean, what was that, 2010, 2011?
Yeah, I got let go in 2010.
Okay,
yeah.
So up until
2011, I had no sponsor yet.
So up until last year with the O'Neill Coldwater Classic, so you had like 3 years, two or three years?
Yeah.
Without a main sponsor?
3 years, yeah.
What's it like doing the qualifying series with no main sponsor? What's that lifestyle like?
The first couple years it was pretty much impossible.
Really?
Yeah. So in 2010 I had a pretty bad year. I think I ended up finishing like 130 or something on the QS, so I wasn't even in the primes, and then I got dropped by Billabong. And so 2011 I didn't even focus on doing any of the QSs, really.
Okay.
I kind of just did a couple events that were close that I could afford. You know, I still had Sanook, and they've just been awesome. And then Spy at the time was supporting me a lot. So I've had really good sponsors behind me, you know, that kept me going and kept food on the table.
Yeah. Which is important to point out, because I feel like lots of times people and webcasters will say, oh, that person's sponsorless.
Yeah.
And they're not.
They're
you know,
not,
they
yeah.
don't have a title sponsor, I guess. But
for sure. But sometimes, yeah. I mean,
it overlooks the value of those companies.
It does. And sometimes the littler sponsors are, you know, they can be better than, you know, the big ones. So,
totally.
Yeah. So the one thing I think I didn't realize as much, you know, like when you're a kid and I was riding for Billabong, and I kind of, maybe I expected a lot, you know, and
okay.
and I, there's things now that I realize that I could have been a little more calm with, you know what I mean? Or a little more like, oh, you know, the economy's bad. Maybe, you know, I should just bite the bullet and prove myself rather than asking for things. You know,
like,
what I mean?
Any specific examples?
Well, just, you know, the money that I was making at the time to do the QS, it was really hard to do the whole QS on it.
Yeah.
So I, you know, when I got dropped, I asked for more. And they didn't like that, you know, that I wanted more and
sure.
stuff. And so just because it was, you know, really hard, I wasn't making anything.
Yeah.
I was spending absolutely everything. Actually, I was spending more.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess I could have just bit the bullet and,
mm-hmm.
you know, been like, all right, whatever, that's fine. Then I'll take what I can get. You know,
right.
after 3 years of not having a sponsor, you know, sometimes I wish I would have done that. But then, you know, the way things worked out, it actually worked out kind of better, and you just appreciate things more, you know. And even the little things, you know, like just getting a box of clothes or
right.
just getting a sticker on your board, it's crazy. Like, now the economy is bad, like, it's, you really have to just take what you can and, you know, just do your best. And I think what matters the most is just the love for surfing, you know, like
yeah.
instead of, like, for kids and stuff like that. I know as a kid you're always trying to get more and more, and I think you should just surf because you love it, and it has nothing to do with the money at all, and the money will just come or whatever, you know. And that was something, you know, I think you just learn that.
Yeah, you get distracted along the way.
With an older age, you know? Yeah, for sure.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But
you did 14 QS events last year, I think, 2014, and you finished 31st in the rankings, which is worth pointing out. Like you said, if you made a couple more heats at Sunset, you would have qualified. I guess 16th place was the cutoff, Ricardo Christie, and you were in 31st.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about, like, doing 14 events. What are the expenses? Like, can you share numbers? Like, what can you expect to spend following the qualifying series over 12 months?
I think probably it's a good 30 grand.
Okay.
I would say, yeah, or more.
More. 40, I was thinking 40 it'd be or more 50. Too.
Yeah. I mean, it depends. It depends if you travel by yourself.
Sure. If you're sharing rooms with people and stuff.
And it depends on the places you're going. But yeah, 50 grand, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, about everything together would probably be 50 grand. Yeah, just the QS too. That's not even counting like photo trips and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, that you usually have to pay for these days. So
how, I know this varies from person to person based on your results, but I mean, how likely is it that contest earnings actually balance out with the expenses?
Yeah, I mean, they help if you're doing well, you know. It's, what is it? It's 40 grand if you win a 6-star prime, I think. I believe, yeah. So if you're winning, yeah.
Well, what round are you looking to get to break even, I guess, is the...
Well, most trips will cost around like $3,000 to $5,000, I would say.
Yeah.
Each one. And so that is around a ninth.
Oh,
I think it's,
man.
It's four grand you get for a ninth. So yeah, I mean, a lot of times you're not breaking even, yeah.
Yeah,
so
there's 100-something guys spending the $3,000 or $4,000 and not breaking even.
Exactly. So yeah,
and
about a
ninth. Nine guys make breaking even.
Yeah. So yeah, it's rough. I mean, if you lose in that first round, I think you get what, like $900 or something. Yeah. So
yeah, that's
brutal. That might pay for your boards or a rental car. Yeah, it's brutal, especially without a sponsor. And you know, I in 2012 I did a couple events and I was able to get into prime, so I just did the whole thing out of my pocket, and I was like, you know, I don't care if I have a sponsor or not, if I'm getting into primes, I want to do it. And so I pretty much did every single prime 6-star event, and I put myself in like a lot of debt. I didn't do well too, so was another thing that was hard. I only made a few heats. I mean, I still finished in the top 100 that year, but I was, you know, making one or, you know, one heat maybe here and there, and I didn't get a ninth or anything like that. So I put myself probably about 20 $1,000 in debt.
Dang.
Yeah, from that year. And then I won the Coldwater at the end of that year. And then I pretty much used all my my contest earnings to pay off that debt.
Sure.
From the year before.
That's a good strategy.
And yeah, I got through it, so I was stoked on that. And then
So I should point out to listeners who aren't aware, like, the O'Neill Coldwater Classic that year implemented a brand new idea, which was, we're going to have the one winner, we're going to give a $50,000 sponsor, 1 year contract to, basically. And so, I don't know, did second place even get anything at all? Or
no.
Yeah, okay. So yeah. 16 guys?
Winner take all, yeah.
16 guys, winner take all, and you won that event.
Yeah.
And they did it again this past year. Nate Yeomans won,
yeah,
which was awesome. Good to see. Mm-hmm. So I always wonder too, like, with that $50,000 contract, is there a travel budget in addition to that, or is it just like, here's $50K for you to either spend how you want?
No, there's no travel fund, so
okay.
It's just $50K to spend how you want, but it's directed towards doing the QS. Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah,
and I wanted to I want to qualify still. So
yeah,
that's my dream. So that's I use it, you know, towards that.
And that 1 year is expired.
Uh-huh.
Have you guys renewed, or what's that look like?
Yeah, I'm blessed enough to be re-signed this year for another year for 2015.
That's
super,
amazing.
Super stoked.
Yeah, that was something.
Thank you, O'Neill.
nobody discussed that in the press.
Yeah.
Or did they? And I just missed it?
No.
Nobody did.
Yeah.
Because even during this past year's Coldwater Classic, I was like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen to Tori now.
Yeah.
Like, they're putting Nate on and kicking Tori off, or what's the deal, you know?
Yeah.
But then I saw some of your Hawaii campaign, and I was like, oh, he's still got the sticker, so it must be on.
Yeah, yeah,
another
year. I'm super stoked.
Cool.
Yeah, so
I guess what you did then throughout the last year probably dictated their decision, right? They were happy?
Yeah, I think, yeah, they said they were happy, so
good.
They kept me on, so
good.
I'm really stoked, yeah.
Good for you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What do you think the prospects would have been like if you did not win that Coldwater Classic? What would 2014 have looked like? Knowing that you're 20 grand in debt, like, do you commit another 20 grand?
I don't think I would have. I might have just tried something different. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the future would have held. I was kind of thinking, because, you know, that contest was towards the end of the year, and I was like, man, I don't think I can do this another year, you know. I'll just do the events that are close, you know. Maybe if Lowers or Huntington, and because I was still, you know, able to get into the prime, so maybe I'll just do ones that are really close and, you know, ones I have friends at and I can stay.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That's kind of how I did 2000 and 2012. It's just kind of, you know, stayed at the places I could and whatever. But I definitely wouldn't have gave it that much of a, you know, go. I would have been more like doing little pro-ams around here, trying to get money and pay off that debt.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't like being in debt.
No, absolutely not. It's a lot of pressure, man.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
It's like there's already enough pressure on you to make a heat, and then when you add that.
Yeah.
And that's what's crazy about it. When you, like, Kelly's talked about this at times, where things come down to literally a wave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you can hinge your entire year on a wave that you either made or you didn't make or you should have gone on when you. And so for you with that Coldwater Classic, there was probably heats, if not the final, maybe it was in the earlier rounds, where it's like, had you not made that wave and gotten that score, you wouldn't have gotten that contract, and you would have not, you know. It's like crazy.
It's crazy how it all works out. I know. It's funny when usually you look at, I like how you looked at it like that, but usually you're like, man, if I would have went on that wave, I would have made
sure.
The heat. But yeah, for sure, you know, surfing is crazy. There's so many variables, and if you don't make that, you know, perfect split decision, it can either go your way or not. So,
yeah and then you think you're doing the right thing and you rupture your spleen.
Yeah,
you know, you see
exactly.
That wave coming and you're like, this is the one. And then something goes wrong. So
exactly,
you never know.
That's life, right? You just gotta roll with the punches and stay as positive as you can.
Well, the other kind of the flip side is there's so much talent, you know, like the flip side of the economic downturn is what I mean, is like there's more talent now than there's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And because everybody, all the brands went through that belt tightening of like, let's cut expenses, I think they're more cautious of how they spend their money as well.
Mm-hmm.
You look at guys who are in very similar scenarios as you, like Granger Larson surfs unbelievably well.
Yeah.
Clay Marzo.
Yeah.
I was watching footage of Lee Wilson today from Bali. Like, he's never done the QS, but, like, the guy is a world-class surfer.
Yep.
You know, there's just so much talent everywhere
yep.
that you realize, you go, crap, this brand, really, all they want to do is sell board shorts, and there's hundreds of guys who can help them sell board shorts. You know, like, yep. it becomes very a precarious thing where it's like,
yeah.
what is one person's value versus the others? And
yeah.
It's interesting. It's something that I think we analyze more now than we ever did before mm-hmm. because there's that wealth of talent and this weird equation, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And value can come down to that one wave too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Someone gets the craziest wave ever, their value goes up. And
totally.
Yeah.
And so, that's the other thing is those guys, like that top end, those guys are making so much money now too
mm-hmm.
that I don't know. It's there's a bigger disparity, I guess, between like the super well-to-do versus the grinders, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And
yeah.
There's not that much talent difference. There's just a huge wealth disparity, you know? Yeah. Like between John and Granger Larson, it's like John's better, but not that much better.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It is crazy, huh?
Yeah. It's an interesting time.
Lucky break. I guess you just gotta keep trying as hard as you can, no matter what, and don't get discouraged, you know?
With talking about like $50,000 contract and sponsor support and things like that, when you sustain an injury like you did mm-hmm. Do you have insurance through sponsors or how does that work?
Not through sponsors, but I was practicing for the Pipe Masters, so the ASP or the WSL is taking care of that, so that was really awesome.
That's amazing.
Because I mean, between the, you know, all the CAT scans, X-rays, and and the ambulance ride and the 3 days in the hospital, it was a big bill, and they were nice enough, you know, to take care of that. So I've been paying that, you know, insurance since I've been on the QS, so it's paying off. Yeah, thank you, WSL.
You got it all back in one fell swoop.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been a hard one.
For sure. So even though you were practicing for the event, like that falls under that umbrella, it doesn't have to be during a heat?
Yes, yeah, so they have a really good insurance for us. Yeah.
Okay.
So when we're practicing for events or anything around the event, if we get hurt, the WSL takes care of it. So we have a really good insurance with those guys, so that's nice. It's mm-hmm. good that surfers have that, because
that is nice.
Yeah.
So also nice. Something that never gets talked about, I guess,
yeah.
in the media.
It's a really good thing.
What ways do you see, or do you have any ways that you could see that the WSL could improve qualifying tour? Number one, for you, the surfer, to allow you to do the best surfing that you could do, but mm-hmm. also for us, the viewer, just to witness the best surfing.
Yeah, for sure. I think the number one thing that they could do to improve the WQS is having, you know, better waves. If you look at the tour, you know, you got Jeffrey's Bay, you got Chopo, you got Pipe and stuff like that, Snapper Rock, you know. They got point breaks and barreling waves, you know, you have a few beach breaks, you know, like Rio and stuff like that. But on the QS, all we have are beach breaks, and then we have Hawaii. So there's no point breaks, you know what I mean? There's nothing, there's not really a wave on tour that's going to, on the WQS tour, that's going to get us ready for the WCT.
Sure.
It's all beach breaks, and it's, you know, usually, I mean, they are good waves, I'm sure, you know, they can get good, just like anywhere,
yeah.
but they can also be bad too. So,
why don't they have it at places like Chopu and J-Bay?
I'm not asking for like the best waves, like not have, you know what I mean? That would be awesome to have it there, but even if they had like a place like in El Salvador, like they used to have a QS there, and it's a great wave, you know, it's a point break. That would get you ready, you know, it's like a warm water J-Bay. It's not as good, but it's the next best thing. Like, I think they should have events in B-rated waves, you know, as, you know, the CT is the A-rated waves, and we should have B-rated waves that are close to it. You know, there's waves like Chile and Arica. It's a heavy wave.
Yep.
It'd be a great to have a prime there. Like,
right.
It's better to have a prime there than, you know, some beach break that no one really wants to see. You know what I mean? Like, it, as a viewer, you want to see guys on heavy waves. I'm sure there's way more people tuning into the Volcom contest at Pipeline than there is to, you know, some little event that's a 6-star prime. It's rated a lot higher, you know, somewhere else around the world at some little beach break.
Why? I understand the financial decisions when they do the U.S. Open in Huntington. Obviously, that makes sense that they
makes
need
sense.
It.
Yeah.
But why wouldn't they also have events at good waves like Arica? As like, what's the reasoning behind it? Does it cost more to go one place versus another? Or
I think the reasoning is probably, I mean, I think the towns might help out with some of the you know, payment of the events. I'm not really sure. But, it most of these places we go, the events are the biggest thing in the whole year. You know? So the town likes to put money towards it. It's good tourism. It's good for, their city.
Yeah.
And some towns want to pay it, some don't. Unfortunately, some of the best waves aren't at some of those towns. So, of course, I mean, like I said, I'm sure they do get good and stuff like that. But you watch Dusty qualify in the last two events of the year, and those events, the waves were good.
Yeah.
The whole last year, the waves weren't good once.
Was Dusty doing the other QS events through the year? He did a few, right?
Yeah, and he did.
Yeah, and it's like, not only did he qualify in at Holly Eva and Sunset, he was the best surfer in the world at Holly Eva and Sunset, better than the guys who are on the CT winning events.
Exactly.
Like, that says something, you know?
For sure.
If we as viewers want to witness the best surfing, here's a guy who could not put it together throughout the year, but you put him in good waves and now he's better than Kelly.
And he wins and gets, wins the event and gets second. So, right. I mean, I don't know. I want to see the guys that are the best surfers in the best waves.
Exactly.
And, I think that's one thing they can improve on for sure, is getting better surf. And, don't get me wrong, the airs and stuff, doing airs and beach breaks and stuff like that, I think it's still really important, and it's good to have a few events like that for sure. Yeah, but there needs to be a balance. There just needs to be a balance.
Yeah, for sure.
We've had really good waves on tour before too.
Like,
we had the Maldives. That wave was insane. That left, it's a sick wave. And then, El Salvador too. And now we got lowers back, which is really cool.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so that's insane. The last 2 years we haven't had lowers. That's been kind of depressing. That's a, it's a perfect wave for a contest. And then, South Africa gets really good too. It's just, it just depends.
Bolito.
Bolito gets insane. So, I think it's about having it at the right time of the year too.
Sure.
Yeah. I think that's an important thing. And I think they're kind of getting that now. I think they're having contests at better times of year. Mm-hmm. I heard this year they, are kind of moving events that were a little bit later around so that the waves are good at that time, like France, they have it kind of, I believe they have it too early.
Right.
So there's,
little adjustments that can be made at the same location.
Exactly. And they're adjusting things to where I was looking at the schedule as well, and they're having, a Brazil events, back to back, which is cool,
so you don't have to fly there twice.
Yeah. I went to Brazil 3 times last year.
Jeez.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that's inefficient.
It's a lot, yeah. So,
In regards to surfboards, how many boards do you go through in a year?
With Hawaii included.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably
in a 12-month span, let's say.
Oh man, at least 20-something, 30.
20-something.
Yeah, probably. 20, 25.
Who's like that. How does sponsorship work with surfboards? Do you pay full freight? Do you get a discount? Do you get boards for free?
Well, I've had the same shaper since I was 9 years old, Tim Carroll's surfboards.
Yeah.
So he gives me free boards. And then I've been working with this guy, Robert Weiner, and he's in California. And since I've kind of live out here now, I live here around this time, February to November, I've been getting a lot of boards from him just because it's kind of easier. I don't really go back to Hawaii as much. And so I kind of get boards from both of them. And,
those are free, though.
The trade-ins.
Trade-ins, gotcha.
Yeah. So they both are a huge support. And I kind of, just try to dial in Cali. And then Hawaii, I dial in Cali with Rob and kind of dial in Hawaii with Tim. And
cool.
It's been good. Last year has been really good. They've shaped me some amazing surfboards. So
yeah, I saw I think last year I saw somewhere Matt Biolis sent 105 surfboards to Snapper for the event between the women and the men.
Wow.
And it's how is that even practical?
Yeah.
You know, if and maybe not all those guys are getting all their boards for free. Maybe some people are paying cost, but it's like, that's an enormous expense.
Yeah.
Because surfboard shapers aren't getting rich anyways. It's not a high profit business, you
know?
Right,
right. Yeah, for sure. That's crazy. Yeah.
It is crazy.
That's a lot of boards.
Do you think guys like Kelly on like the absolute upper level actually get paid from their board companies? Do those deals exist?
I think they probably get paid for their models that they create.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they probably have their models that they, you know, help the shaper, you know, make and stuff, and they probably get some kind of royalty from that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
What's your plan moving forward for 2015? I mean, obviously, you're on the cusp of qualifying this past year. Is that the main goal this year?
Yeah, I definitely want to give it a, you know, give it a good swing again this year. You know, with the WSL and everything kind of happening, you know, all the changes, I'm really excited to compete and you know, travel and kind of check it out, everything that's new. It sounds like it's, you know, getting better, and it's I'm excited to, you know, go compete.
Trav Logie is the commissioner, right?
Yeah,
for the QS. That's kind of
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, I love Trav. He's the man.
You did 14 events last year. What's your plan for this year? Do you do the same amount or?
Gonna do whatever's on that schedule pretty much as far as primes go.
Okay.
And six stars probably.
Where's the first event?
The first event, Hawaii right now, the Vulcan, they just had it, and then they have two events in Australia, and I think the first one starts on the 9th or so.
Okay.
February. And so I'm not surfing yet, so I'm not gonna be doing Australia, unfortunately.
Okay.
But my first event will be Lowers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, what month is that?
April.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so yeah.
Exciting.
Yeah, exciting.
Does it put pressure on you missing those first events?
But they're not, I want to say yeah, because they're not primes, but missing the Vulcan is pretty heartbreaking, and the Pipe Masters, I mean, Pipe's like one of my favorite ways in the world, if not my favorite, and I kind of miss both of those events, so
yeah, totally.
That's kind of hard, but it's okay. I mean, you know, I'm really excited for Lowers.
Sure.
I really like that wave a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to go out there and surf with, you know, a couple other guys. It's pretty sick, you know.
Totally.
Hopefully I'll just be 100% by then. That's kind of my main goal.
Cool.
Yeah.
One of the other things I'm curious about is, like, just from following you on Instagram or social media or whatever, it looks like you've been in a long-term relationship, right?
Yeah.
With a woman, obviously.
Yep. Yeah, not a man.
No, should probably point that out. What are the challenges of that, like being on the road so much and maintaining a long-term relationship?
Yeah, it definitely is challenging sometimes. You know, you definitely have to have someone who's extremely understanding, you know, and
is she based in Hawaii or
no, she's in California.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, her family lives out here, so they that's another thing who's been so much support and allowed me to do what I've been able to do is her family. They let me stay with them during, you know, summertime and stuff like that, so without them I would have for sure had to get a job. And
yeah
so
when you're on the road though, how tough is that? I mean,
yeah, no, it's really tough, you know. It's a lot of Skype, it's a lot of texting and calling, and, you know, just, you know, obviously trust too, and we don't have trust issues, so that's good. And and just not, you know, getting jealous or anything like that, none of that kind of stuff. It's just, you know the person, know that, you know, they're going to be true and support them. And, you know, she's amazing support. She supports me so much, and she's the kind of girl that's up at 2 a.m. watching my heat and, you know, Brazil rooting me on.
That's awesome.
And he's sending me texts before, like, go get it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that keeps me going too. So it's really important to have, you know, her as my partner.
It's, that's just a detail that's always fascinated me, like watching the pros on tour and stuff, and like how it can be a distraction for some. Like being single can be a distraction for some.
Yep.
And then being in a relationship can be a distraction for some.
Mm-hmm.
And how each person processes it differently.
Yeah.
And now I think things have changed and people make enough money now to where they bring their families with them, which is something we didn't see 5 years ago.
Right,
you know?
Right, for sure.
Parco and the Hobgoods and stuff have like their whole family with them, which is crazy.
That's the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
For me.
Which I think is kind of the ultimate goal, which is like, if you're always in flux, changing, getting used to new food and new surroundings, that throws off your competitive focus.
For sure.
And so I think what Kelly's done successfully is he's at home everywhere that he goes.
Exactly.
Because he's done it for 30 years now.
Totally.
And he knows people. And it's like he just shows up and it's like sleeping in his own bed, eating his own food everywhere.
Yeah.
And
it's
now
all about comfort. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really is. It's a huge edge.
Yeah.
For sure. And I mean, even going to a place that doesn't speak your own language, you know,
right.
it's crazy. It can be a culture shock, especially if it's your first time. And, you know, you can see things that you might not see every day in America, you know
yeah.
what I mean? And it's you know, for other people, you know, vice versa as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, Brazil coming here or whatever, it's definitely all about the comfort. And, that's the thing. I mean, Kelly's been going to these events for so many years. He's obviously has that comfort and I think that definitely helps. And, you know, he knows the waves, he's seen the waves, you know, and the conditions and the way it's changed a lot more than, you know, 99% of the guys on tour, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no one is at his age still doing it, so.
It seems like he brings his own diet with him everywhere that he goes, too, so he's eating the same foods regularly.
Yeah.
Rather than
sure.
shocking your system, you know.
Yeah, and it's crazy. That's something that you kind of have to give up if you're going to be a pro surfer is the home life, because it doesn't exist really. You just, everywhere you go is a home. Your home's a suitcase and your board bag.
Yeah. I would assume though, Southern California is probably a little more convenient to be located, right? When you're traveling around the world.
Yeah.
More convenient than the
Way
Big Island.
Easier. Yeah, for sure. That's kind of why I made the move out here about 3 years ago. Pretty much after I lost Bill Long, I came straight out here. And,
okay.
So that's helped a lot, and moving out here is that was probably one of the best moves I've ever made in my career.
Yeah,
you know, I always felt like I wasn't as good at small waves and beach breaks and stuff like that as a lot of these guys that, you know, surf it every day. There's not really a beach break on the Big Island, so
sure. Yeah.
So yeah, I thought that was definitely a place I need to improve in, and I think it's helping a lot being out here and surfing.
Yeah.
Being close to my supporters too, you know, all
right.
the sponsors and stuff like that. It's built those relationships, and it's nice when you can call someone a good friend, and you know they also are your sponsor and they want the best for you. That's awesome.
I did a episode with Morgan Mawson, photographer,
uh-huh.
right? And one of the things he told me, like in terms of advice that he had for other people who are getting into photography, was it's not so much about what you show as it is about what you don't show.
Uh-huh.
Like everybody thinks with social media and the way that things, the internet is like, oh, let's just put out tons of content.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, you know, you can do that. And people have been successful with doing that. But if you put out mediocre content and that's what you're known for, it's hard to change people's opinion of you.
Right.
And so he's like, what I would recommend for young people is just like, dude, just put out your A+ stuff and just stand behind it, and you can always be proud of it.
Yeah, for sure.
I bring all that up just to ask you, like, what advice do you have? Kind of, I would say you've had a bit of a career, but there's still a lot of career ahead of you, especially if you qualify.
You.
You look at this last portion is just the stepping stones to a long career ahead. What is your advice, kind of looking back? Are there any things that you would have changed? Or advice that you would give to somebody who's just starting up?
The way it's worked out lately, I don't think I would change anything. You know, not having a sponsor was hard, but it definitely made me appreciate a lot of stuff. And that was a good learning process. You know, I don't like, you know, I mean, obviously, sometimes human nature is, you know, wow, I wish I would have done that.
Yeah.
you know, and not that. And obviously, there's a lot of things in my life where I could have done that and been a little, you know, whatever, less reckless or whatever, and been a little bit smarter and wiser. But I think you learn a lot of things with, you know, with age, and you know, one of the best things I think is, you know, making mistakes, and then that's the best way of learning. So yeah, I mean, I don't think I made any major mistakes, but I definitely learned from, you know, the ones that I did make.
Mm-hmm.
And but as far as advice goes, I mean, just appreciating your supporters, you know, and really just kind of doing everything you can to help a company grow, you know. Like I feel like the sponsors I have now, it's very like family oriented, you know. I feel like they're my good friends, And not only that, though, I feel like I'm a part of the company rather than maybe before, where I was like, oh, you know, what can I get out of it? It's kind of like, what can I do to help this company grow? Mm. And I think that's the most important thing. And if you do that, you know, it's not only is it going to make your, you know, company or sponsor happy, it's also going to build your profile, you know, outstandingly. So, yeah, I think that was something that I could have noticed at a younger age. And just, you're in it together and help each other grow, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Because if you're an employee, aside from professional surfing, if you're an employee anywhere, that is what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And not enough pro surfers, I think, look at their relationship as being an employee of this brand, which in all reality you are.
I didn't. Yeah, for sure. At a young age, I never thought, you know, it was work. Yeah,
right.
I was going surfing, you know.
Right.
I was going here, I was going there, but it didn't seem like work. But, no, there is a job aspect to it. And I think you have to maintain, you know, a good healthy profile, you know, and sponsors will be stoked on that, and also just, you know, like I said, just helping each other out.
Yeah,
I think that's the most important thing. And at a young age, you don't realize that.
You don't.
I'm like, what can I do to get here?
Exactly.
It's not like, you know, what can I do to help my company and help each other grow into something huge.
Yeah. I'm curious too, like, you're a citizen of the world, you've been able to travel all these amazing places, and you've also seen the sport go through ups and downs with the things we discussed in this show. Now you see a lot of money being poured in to guys like John. What are you most excited about kind of in surfing? And then what are you kind of most concerned? Do you have any concerns about the way things are going?
Well, what I'm most excited about is just watching the sport grow. You know, I'm kind of going to touch on two subjects here, but, being like a competitive surfer, I really like the competitiveness in surfing. You know, I love football, I love sports, and it's just, you know, me as a person. And I like to see it becoming more professional. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm really stoked to see the WSL and, you know, call it jocks or whatever, if you will. But, you know, I appreciate that. I appreciate someone, you know, starting from the bottom and, you know, working their way all the way up to the top and being the best they can be. You know, I think competitive surfing really portrays that. And, you know, I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really cool thing that surfing is growing into, and it's cool to watch.
Yeah.
And, one thing that I don't like really care about, that a lot of people seem to care about, is like, kind of like, you know, in surfing, it seems like it's like this, you know, this, the way you dress or this profile thing that you portray yourself as being at, not caring that much, you know, like I care a lot about surfing. I'm not going to lie. Like, I care a lot about being in good health and, you know, being strong enough to do my best. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, call me a jock if you will, but I think it's cool. You know, like, definitely surfing does have a different aspect to it that is a lot different than football or something like that. You know, you don't have to be in the gym every day to be, you know, good at surfing. You know what I mean? You have to be in the water, and there is a connection with nature that is a lot different than most sports. But I think, like, this road that surfing's, this trendy road that's kind of the opposite direction, I mean, whatever. I don't see anything cool about it at all.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Right. The kind of the apathy of not caring about the apathy of not caring about your performance or any of that stuff.
Yeah. For sure. But
yeah, what's interesting is, like, I feel the same way. I'm not really hip to that scene, but there's brands that market to that culture, and therefore they will support those surfers, and both can exist.
Yeah.
Both things can coexist.
I do believe that both can exist.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it is cool in surfing that you kind of can have both of those personalities for sure. But, and I think it just needs to be a balance for sure.
Yeah.
And that seems like that's where surfing's going. So it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. One of the kind of final questions we ask everybody is just, what was the last surfboard that you rode? I would assume it was at Backdoor.
Yep, that was the last surfboard I rode, was at Backdoor.
So what was the board specifically? Is it Tim Carroll?
It was a Tim Carroll 6.4, yeah. It's actually a board that I probably won't be riding too much anymore, because 2 weeks before that, I got a concussion on the same board at Sunset.
No way.
So, yeah, I'll probably I don't know, there's something up with that board. I'm not going to ride it anymore because I don't know what's next.
did you hit your head on the board for the concussion, or how did that happen?
No, it was the water again.
Really?
At sunset, yeah. I just, yeah.
Like on a free fall drop or what?
The first stupid thing I did was I tried to do a floater at sunset.
Oh, okay.
On the West Bowl.
I don't think I've ever seen that work out.
Yeah. And I fell back and I just like landed on the back of my head and lost conscious. And
oh, kinda, you did?
Yeah. Like full saw stars and went black for you know, a moment, and came up and was kind of like disoriented. And then I've been spending some time at the hospital lately. I went to the hospital and a day later just to make sure everything was okay, because that was actually on Thanksgiving, and the sunset, you know, could have started the next day or so. I was battling the concussion thing as well.
Wow.
In my heat at sunset, and then the spleen thing too. So yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, it was kind of a rough winter, but Hall Evo was great. The waves were pumping and the boys were ripping. It was really cool. So
cool.
It started off good.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
No worries,
that's
man.
All
Thanks
I got.
A lot. I
yeah.
appreciate it.
Absolutely. Right on. Thank you so much, Tori. Of course, we have videos of everything that we discussed, the wipeout, footage of Tori ripping prior to the wipeout, and even some video clips that I personally filmed when Tori was in town for the US Open in 2012, just free surfing. So you can check all of that stuff out on our website, surfsplendorpodcast.com. And then we'll link to Tori's blog from there, as well as his Instagram and everything that you need to know to continue to follow Tori's career and path to the WCT. All right, so check all that out on our website. You can also leave a comment for any of our shows. There's a comment section for every single episode, so feel free to engage there. There's also a music archive for all of the songs that were in every episode of Surf Splendor. And then, of course, continue this conversation on social media at Surf Splendor on Instagram and Facebook and all that jazz. All right, so thank you. We will be back next week with an all-new episode. Until then, this is your host of Surf Splendor, David Scales, saying, shred on.